Welcome to the Mike and Doug Show, a production of a joint effort between Americans for Innovation and Aim for Truth. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hi, Douglas. Nice to talk to you today.
It's been a while since we've been on the air, and so I want to give a few introductory remarks to set the stage for some of the exciting research that you have now uncovered about who the controllers, the British Pilgrim controllers of our White House actually are. You have it down to the very law companies and to the very individuals who are now pulling the strings, apparently. But I want to make a few opening remarks. Now, we had warned all of you that we were in a purple revolution, a George Soros attempt to overthrow an election. They tried it in 2016. They accomplished it in 2020. Now, we had warned you who it was that did it, right down to Lord Mark Malik Brown and his SGO Smartmatic, the very company, not Dominion, but Smartmatic. And if you go deeper to Optech, the very software that runs all the election rigging machines throughout the world and controls most of the political environment that we live in that creates globalism. We told you who those people were. We showed you that the Pilgrim influence was so powerful that we had predicted that, of course, Trump would win the election. We also had predicted that it would be contested when we predicted that it would not be settled until at least late December. At this point, it is still not settled. It is a contested election that, because of Mike Pence's absolute betrayal of Trump and all of America in not accepting the seven states that sent alternate electors for the count, which then would have thrown the whole thing back into the way that it should have been done. It should have gone to the House, and then they should have voted one vote per state for who would be elected as the president, which would, of course, come out Trump. So had Pence done any of the four or five options that he had, which he didn't, it wouldn't have happened. And so people gave Trump, I think, of some very bad, bad political advice. And we had warned at the time that if he did not sue the National Archivist when they attempted to file the first filings of those Electoral College votes, that he wouldn't win the day. And he did not do that. And who would have known that the Supreme Court would not even give him standing to bring a case to the Supreme Court concerning federal elections? We have never in American history seen justice go so awry. We've never seen an overt, basically, this was a revolution. This was a coup d'etat. This was a political overthrow by whatever you want to call them. I call them demon rats because they tend to be in the Democrat Party. But remember, there's only one party. And then there's the MAGA Party. So what we saw was what we unfortunately couldn't predict, which was what would happen with the contesting of the election. So for all of us on the side of honesty, we saw hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of people that we have on tape, on video, with hard evidence. We have 40,000 pieces of hard evidence and affidavits showing election rigging during the 2020 election. And yet not a single judge will listen to any of it. Any one of those is a federal crime that should have put a halt on the results that came from that state. So what we really saw was a unified effort from the judges, who act as if they're British aristocracy and that they can decide whatever they want in their courts instead of deciding what the Constitution says is just and honest and according to the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. What we saw was the worst. Ignoring the Department of Justice of the biggest crimes that we've ever seen in American history. The FBI ignored it. The CIA, of course, had backed off because Trump had pushed them off. But we got to see that the British and the Pilgrims were as active as ever. For instance, in Facebook, we got to see that they sent over the Deputy Prime Minister of England came over to run the kind of the face of Facebook, Nick Clegg. And before that, Richard Allen, who was a lord who came from Britain, they sent over their best Pilgrim Society members to try to keep Facebook as the manipulative social media control for the election, but they also had Google under control. They had all of the social medias under control. Today, we're going to hear about someone in that line of Lord Mark Malik Brown, who was doing the same kind of thing, and he is the pilgrim controller of Kamala Harris. His name is Nigel Knowles. But
Sir Nigel Knowles.
Sir Nigel Knowles.
You're right.
Yeah. So is George Soros. Contests elections all over the world, and 14 times he has won in these color revolutions. This will make the 15th time, but I'm not sure that he has won because there's been too many already filed cases and contested issues that if any judge stops being simply, whether they know it or not, an agent of the Pilgrim Society's British control over America, which gives the common person no rank, no file, no title, so that we even have any standing to go before a court. The president of the United States didn't have standing to go before the court. And we now have Kamala Harris, who is a non-citizen, who is an illegal alien, just like Barry Sotero was, both of whom are CIA indoctrinated agents. They're going to be leading our country because, of course, Joe doesn't even know where he is. I don't know that Joe's come out of his basement except when he goes to do those filmings of his White House signings of things, which are all fake. But anyway, we get to see that the pilgrims, like Lord Mark Malik Brown, who rigged the election, and we went into detail for all of you beforehand to tell you exactly how it would go down, and it did. And that's the reason we could predict ahead of time that it would be contested, but we could not predict the hundreds and thousands of Democrat supporters and liberals and Trump haters who came out and committed in unity a conspiracy of federal crimes that has never been seen in history before. So all I can say is, for a while I was speechless. What is there to say? But I do not believe the final words on this have been said. And the way that history will speak things oftentimes is not the way the people who are living that history think things really are. So we'll see as we go along. But we told all of you about this ahead of time. We warned you. We gave you the details. We gave the name of the people. And now we're going to give you the name of the people who are controlling the White House, because the good research of the miners and Michael McKibben have discovered good old Nigel Knowles and how it is that they have their connection to the White House and control it. What say ye, Michael?
Well, his name came up. We had seen his name in the past when we were studying Lord Mark Malik Brown and Smartmatic and all the vote rigging about three or four years ago, but didn't focus on him. And when Kamala Harris emerged, married to this Doug Emhoff, we noticed that Doug Emhoff worked for DLA Piper. And when Sidney Powell started filing all those recent election fraud cases, we went back and looked at who all is on the board of Smartmatic, and we noticed that this Sir Nigel Knowles was on the board. And none of our researchers had ever focused on him, so that happened. And wow, did we discover a key player who was kind of hiding in plain sight. And one of the things we do when we start looking at people, as you know, is we just look at what's out there in their resumes that we can learn from these people. And one of the things that became obvious quickly is that Sir Nigel Knowles hides who his parents are. Now, this is very unusual when you look at people who have titles in England not to brag about their family. And yet he said nothing. You couldn't find anything. And so the researchers started digging, and after about 2 weeks of dry holes, we finally discovered the missing link, in that he has taken the name of his mother's side of the family, not his father, and therefore the Knowles family became prominent in this story. And the Knowles go way back to multiple generations, and I forget what his name is, Sir James Knowles. And we found very interesting connections between Sir James Knowles, whose son became Sir James Knowles, and Cecil Rhodes, and Ruskin, and that whole group of early communists in Britain are associated with the Knowles family. And then on his mother's side of the family, we see these multi-generation assumptions of power that have culminated in this Sir Nigel Knowles, who is clearly a groomed individual. And then we discovered that he had been the chairman of DLA Piper, which is a well-known international law firm. And as we started digging into that relationship, we see that Knowles was really handed DLA Piper, and that DLA Piper, in our opinion, is the primary law firm for the British Crown to this day. And as further evidence of that, in the late 90s, Sir Nigel Knowles became the founding trustee of a reorganized Prince's Trust. So he was working for Prince Charles in the 90s going forward. And he then in about 2014 formed something called the Prince's Trust International. And they had actually announced that in Malta, Knights of Malta. And then we discover that over the last few years, they started incorporating their operation in the United States as Prince's Trust America. And they actually have operations in San Francisco, New York, Texas, Dallas, Texas, and California, San Francisco. And so we see the Prince's Trust run by Sir Nigel Knowles, who is also an election rigger with Lord Mark Malik Brown and Smartmatic and Dominion. We see him making major moves into the United States, and they were making those moves during the Trump last 4 years. And it looks like Prince Charles is finally emerging from behind the scenes as one of the key players in the Pilgrim Society's international strategy, and that he has now been told to take the reins, and they are now moving into the United States. Those are all facts.
Well, also, Perkins Coie. When we say Perkins Coie, we think, oh yeah, the law firm that was used by Hillary, and she didn't get prosecuted for the Russian dossier, which was completely fake, which she actually had part of it written herself. Why? Because Perkins Coie was on the case. And same thing with Obama, with all those lawsuits against Obama. Why? Nothing. Perkins Coie was on the case. Well, DLL Piper, I believe, is now the new Perkins Coie for the White House. And now it's directly in the Queen's lap. It's right. Before it was a little bit here in America, Perkins Coie, and it basically rested with the chief of staff. What was his name? John Podesta.
Podesta.
I mean, he appointed everybody for three administrations. He was in control of Washington, D.C., period. But now what do we have? Oh, no. Now we're going to have a Kamala Harris who is nothing but a political, sexual, what would you call her, predator, who, in fact, her little arranged marriage to Doug Emhoff is nothing more than a way for her to get a direct connection to the Queen.
Correct.
And so that's what got her a direct connection to the White House. Though she was the most unlikely of all candidates, she was seen as vile and awful. People hated to look at her, hated looking at her face. When they did all the studies on it, they said, no. Absolutely not. She got like the lowest votes of all the people in the primary, right?
Well, we need to be reminded that she was from a Jamaican family and is a Jamaican citizen by birth. And as we know, Jamaica, when her father came over to work on his doctorate at Berkeley, Jamaica was still British. And he came over on a British passport, which we have. And during that time, they got what's called home rule, and they created all of these Commonwealth nations that were essentially a reorganized British Empire. And so Jamaica became a Commonwealth. So she was born into the Commonwealth of Jamaica. And as far as we can see from the records, is a Commonwealth citizen. So in one sense, she's taken orders from her mother's ship, which is Prince Charles and Sir Nigel Knowles and the Pilgrim Society. So she's just carrying on the long tradition. So what the British failed to achieve in 1812 when they sacked the White House and burned it down, they've now achieved through Kamala Harris.
Kamala is more loyal to the Queen than the Queen's children are to the Queen. Okay. Yeah. She is now, the best we can figure is at most she could be a Canadian citizen perhaps, but still that's part of the Commonwealth. Right. So no matter how you want to cut that pie, we again have an illegal alien as president, because Joe Biden, I don't believe, has even left his basement. So I've seen not a single valid picture of Joe doing anything. Okay. So,
well, I believe it,
but I haven't seen it yet.
Right. Well, let's look at Nigel Knowles in a little bit more detail. And what we discovered is that his father, the records that are out there try to bury these facts, but we were able to discover them. And we discovered that his father was the former vice air marshal of the Royal Air Force at the time of the formation of the Five Eyes organization, which essentially the British then took over American intelligence. And so his father would have been right at the center of that development worldwide, where our CIA, our NSA, all of our intelligence gathering capabilities in the US were subsumed by the British. And his father would have been one of the leaders of that. And then we go back two generations earlier than that, we see the connections in that same family with Cecil Rhodes, Alfred Milner, the Round Table. And we need to point out more about this Satanism that was a part of their ethos through W.T. Stead, and also Knowles's great-grandfather was, what was that organization he created?
The Society for Psychical Research?
No, one like that.
The Metaphysical Society.
That's it. Yeah, he was the founder of the Metaphysical Society. So they were fascinated with talking to the dead, communication with the dead, seances. And as we can see now, they've carried this same tradition from the mid to late 1800s all the way to today. And that really forms the basis of the Satanism of this group that's called the New World Order. We call it Pilgrim Society.
And before that, we would have called it globalism. And before that, we could call it internationalism or anti-Americanism or many, many different names. But the point is that it is anti-American. It is against American values, against everything that we believe. And basically, it is an organization that is British-centered, but has many people in America all kowtowing to this aristocracy of people who, when you say pilgrims, it's the people on the Council on Foreign Relations.
Yes.
It's the people who go to used to go to Bilderberger. It's the people who used to go to the Bohemian Grove. It's the people used to be, because those are all changing now. And we're going to talk at some point about the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab. Again, pilgrims. It's all the same people. This is Henry Kissinger and his demon spawns. And literally, I believe that you're going to tell us at some point that, yes, Henry Kissinger passed the baton on to Klaus Schwab.
Yes.
Why? Because these are, in a way, corporate lineages, or they're the same group of people and their children.
Right.
And their children sometimes become bigger monsters than their parents. And sometimes the followers, like W.T. Stead, was a complete nutcase follower of Cecil Rhodes. But Cecil Rhodes only wanted to take over all of Southern Africa. His buddies who sat around his round table, the Rhodes round table, wanted to take over the world using the same imperialistic methods, what people would literally call white supremacy, but it would be any supremacy. It's hegemony. When your plans include taking over the whole world, you're a nutcase.
Let me point out something here that I think a lot of people don't know, that Cecil Rhodes was a member of the Privy Council under Queen Victoria. So everything that we talk about related to the Pilgrims had the blessing of Queen Victoria, then Edward VII, and then every monarch since then. So when we say Pilgrim Society, we also say Privy Council and the British Crown.
And just to frame that, the Pilgrim Society flies under many banners, but one of the banners they fly under is they control all ambassadors to all countries. And so they have these dinners. And so they welcome people into their country, and then they have these little honorary ceremonies and this and that. And during them, that is when the propaganda is spread right there. Right. And it's the same rules that are called the Chatham House Rules, which are the same rules that were used by the Roundtable, Milner's Kindergarten, Milner's Roundtable, the Royal Institute of International Affairs. The Chatham House Rules are anything said here cannot be said beyond these walls. You can't say who said it, and no one can write it down, and no one can be held responsible for what they're saying. But basically, this is the way that it is, and this is what you'll do.
Right.
That is what you need to understand. When you say Pilgrim Society, we're not talking about sweet little dinner parties. We are talking about a full-on brainwashing that is so powerful that you believe that the people who are telling you this are 100% right. So when you go to Davos and try to believe Klaus Schwab, World Economic Forum nonsense with George Soros, the biggest economic predator on the face of the earth, what are you really doing? You're saying, I bow down to the pilgrims. I bow down to the globalists. I bow down to those people who even want to take away globalism from the United Nations. I bow down to the Queen. And if not to the Queen, then it's somebody who thinks that they're going to outdo the Queen, like a Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, so on the surface, one asks oneself, okay, what does the British monarchy have to do with a German named Klaus Schwab and this Swiss gathering that occurs every year when they get together and they drink wine and they carve up the future of the world? And I asked that question. I didn't know. And I didn't actually spend a lot of time on Davos. I figured there had to be a close connection. But until we started digging 2 or 3 weeks ago, we weren't sure. And again, we started looking at Klaus Schwab's public resumes. And let me bottom line it, because it took almost 2 weeks to crack the code. But he has some very deep secrets in his resume, which explain a lot about who he is and why he could be running an organization that he founded in 1971 and still be running to this day. I mean, that's odd to run one organization that long, just on its face. But then when we started looking at his background, his involvement or his father's involvement in before, during, and after World War II starts to play a big role. And here we see this dynastic approach that these corporate people have in passing on this power they create for themselves around their economic power to their children and their grandchildren. And that's now what we've discovered with Klaus Schwab.
Well, I'm glad that you're researching Santa Klaus Schwab, because he disturbs me so much. And every time I see the words World Economic Forum, I get upset, because I don't know a word that goes beyond who gives a care.
But hubris, the nice word is hubris.
Yes. These are people who are economic predators who have been known to have criminal activity. They are wanted in some countries for international crimes against humanity. And then they have a conference and everyone's supposed to stop and listen and do what they say. No, do the opposite. Run the opposite direction. Now, here's what, after talking with you, I have derived. Klaus Schwab has, what's the company that his family has been so connected to?
Escher Weiss.
Escher Weiss. This company goes back to, you say, to the 1800s.
Early 1800s.
And when you said that it has kind of three divisions. One of the divisions is energy, and they have these turbines that are even going to plasma energy and nuclear power plants. Woo! Okay. Well, globalism needs someone to control all energy. So he thinks he can control the whole world's energy. And then he's into basically transhumanism. He believes that the faster we can become transhuman, the better. And he's got a many companies are focused on that. And then he's into robots. Well, robots are the warriors. Those are wars. That's how they make the money. That's how they gain the resources. So in the end, he's covered war, energy, and basically the medical industry and where humans are going.
And well, we've got to talk about the financing. How Usher Vice was financed.
All that's left is the financing and the religion, and then he's got control of the world. So this man is such a nutcase. I started reading his works, and I find them to be boring and stupid and completely theoretical, and they make no sense whatsoever. This is an idea he's had since the 70s that he's been promoting and no one listened to, and now they're going to listen to it because of the Great Reset. No, the Great Reset was coming as soon as Hillary Clinton was to be inaugurated.
Well, let me give you a few facts. You said he started World Economic Forum in 1971. That was after he had spent a year getting an MBA at Harvard and meeting with Henry Kissinger and John Kenneth Galbraith. So as soon as he leaves Harvard, and he had done nothing in his earlier work except go to school, and he had several masters, several PhDs. Then they come to Harvard, get his MBA. He meets Kissinger and goes back, and magically the World Economic Forum begins. Those are facts.
And George Soros is considered to be their number one person that they invite. The person who's conducted 14 attacks on 14 countries and is wanted internationally for crimes against humanity. And yet this is what goes on as the exemplary economic advice, even for the United Nations. They believe that they have usurped the United Nations world banking organizations, the World Trade Organization, the all of them, the International Monetary Fund, all of them. They believe that they and their reset is supposed to just simply erase the work of the United Nations so that they will not have to give out any of their energy, time, or money to the pesky little United Nations people, who are all Brits and Pilgrim Society members all through and through. And I don't think one of them would be there without the Pilgrim Society soaking the money from America to create this globalist organization that is totally anti-American. It might as well say home of communism on the side of the building.
So one might ask, how does British Pilgrim Society relate to Klaus Schwab in Germany and Switzerland? And there is a simple answer, and that is the International Chamber of Commerce. And as we discovered, it was buried very deep in German documents that had to be translated, by the way. We discovered that his father was the managing director of Escher Weiss in Ravensburg, Germany, which is just north of the Swiss border, Swiss Liechtenstein border. And he was, before, during, and after the war, running this gas turbine company that did gas turbines, did heat pumps, did many things in engineering directly related to the war effort and basically commerce. Everybody needed the technology. And they became experts in hydroelectric power, which we'll get back to, I think. But his father was a city father in the city of Ravensburg. And when the war was over, the International Chamber of Commerce moved in, and he became a vice president and later president of the Chamber of Commerce in Ravensburg. Well, as it turns out, Sir Winthrop W. Aldrich was a key player in he was actually the president of the International Chamber of Commerce when Klaus's father formed that chapter in Ravensburg. And he later became the Sir Winthrop and was British, the American ambassador to Britain as well. So he was a key player in the Marshall Plan. That's the bottom line here. And the Marshall Plan, as we know now, was essentially going to leverage the stolen Nazi gold in Zurich, which was, by the way, only about 60 miles away from Ravensburg. And they were going to leverage that and finance the companies that they wanted to move forward in this new post-war economy. And it's real clear that Escher Weiss is a key, was and continues to be to this day, a key player in the development of control of the world's energy production. And that is something that is so central to this story now. It's amazing that it was so sidelined in all of the histories, and certainly in his own writings. So it's this Escher Weiss company. By the way, it's changed names twice. Yeah, the company was Andritz AG, headquartered in Zurich. To this day, to now, they've got about 30,000 employees. They have 200 locations and about over $7 billion in revenue. It's a company that acknowledges its heritage in Escher Weiss. So it's really the successor company. And what is evident from the types of products that Andritz supplies, they do the industries that you were just talking about, hydroelectronics, hydroelectrics, closed cycle gas turbines, which includes nuclear fuel, by the way, which, as you pointed out, then means they're involved in a lot of intelligence-related work and state secrets. So that's another reason probably why we haven't heard of them before. And they also do heat pumps for major buildings throughout the world. In addition to that, they now do robotics, and robotics has been a major part of their company for many decades. So we see a true motivation for Klaus Schwab in all the things that he recommends in those silly books that he writes. And that is, he's trying to push the world to needing a new form of energy, which Escher Weiss is going to magically be able to provide. And therefore, that 300,000 employees may double or triple over the coming years if he's able to achieve this green New Deal.
And that's the amazing thing, because he already has huge energy contracts. What do you say? They're in the billions a year?
Oh, yeah. $7.1 billion.
$7.1 billion worth of contracts. They even did they do most of the turbines for even hydroelectric dams, just like Three Gorges Dam in China.
They actually did Three Gorges. They've done the largest one in the world.
So this company is massive. It has control. It's got a monopoly. And if they're working in nuclear power plants and they are running the turbines, then they have to know about what starts a nuclear power plant. There's two ways to start it, either online power or taking direct current and changing it to alternating current and then using it to start. The nuclear power plant can't start from zero power. It has to it has to already have power going through the lines when it first starts, and they start them all with what used to be a military secret called a magnetohydrodynamic generator. So undoubtedly, Klaus, in his books and in his talks, and especially he's got some young guys who talk about the science of the future, and I was amazed that they were talking about, you know, free energy again. It's like, that's what they said about atomic energy. Oh, free energy, it's all going to be free. Oh, everything's going to be free, all these new inventions. So they're talking about an entire revolution of energy devices that are coming, and that they talk about them as if they're already here. Well, all they have to do is take a modified form of an MHD, and they can use it everything from a household generator to a car generator to anything you want. And they're all self-generating closed systems, and they literally, unless you lose containment of the pressurized gas, they run forever.
Well, by the way, that is a part of the engineering capability of Escher Weiss that they boast on, is the metals, high-grade metals that they have perfected.
And the other thing we didn't talk about, but I thought about when you were talking about these turbines that they make, jets or turbines, you know, the turbines and jets. It would be impossible for a guy like me to know that the SR-71 spy plane has on it two of the most powerful turbine engines in the United States Air Force. As a matter of fact, each of those engines has the thrust power of all of the turbines on a B-52 bomber. And so they have two of those engines, and those engines have never been pushed into wartime speed, but they do know that when they need to push it past a certain point, they simply insert their plasma technology, which we have gone over quite a bit and said that is the technology of the future. It would be next to impossible for me to believe that the engineers of Escher Weiss don't know all about plasma technology. That could be what they're talking about. And we've been warning people about this, saying, this is coming, this is coming. So when, you know, he wants to have a reset and wants all the energy to be all cool, everything cool. Don't worry, we'll take care of the energy. Don't worry, it's all free. Oh, and by the way, transhumanism, no, don't worry about a thing. All your illnesses and stuff, we're going to have transplants for you. We're going to have, you know, inserts. We're going to have med tables. We're going to have everything. Don't worry about it. And by the way, you won't have to do any more work, because the robots will do it, and the wars will be fought by robots. And all you have to do now is find a world religion and a world, you know, special drawing rights from the International Monetary Fund are supposedly the world currency now. And it's supposed to be transformed through Klaus Schwab's obsession with climate change, to the point that he and George Soros almost cry every year saying, people must believe them. We only have minutes left. We have to go. We have to go to the Paris Climate Accord and go to carbon credits. Carbon credits are the new economy. That's the new fiat currency, but it's now going to be digitalized and it's going to be assigned. It will simply be assigned by your height, your weight, how old you are, that's how much you breathe, and you're going to be assigned.
Well, see, that's useful for implementing this plasma technology. But the real key, I think, is that Klaus is the one that's going to profit, or his family. He's 80, so he's getting up there. But they're carrying forward, as usual, the family dynasty into the next generations. And in this case, he is going to drive the world toward Escher Weiss / Andritz technologies so that he will make a killing while people foolishly follow his advice in these stupid books he writes.
Yeah, and you know, his corporate dynasty started when Kissinger handed him the baton.
Right.
But he was already groomed, and he was groomed thereafter. And then, you know, he's been saying this stuff forever. Who cares that he bought a little town in Switzerland and has a conference that he invites the biggest economic pirates on the face of the earth to give their opinion, their public opinion, of the way they think it should go. Well, whatever they say, the way it's going to go, remember, they're betting against that. They're betting you'll follow their advice, and so you can bet that they bet against that. They hedged against their own advice at the World Economic Forum. That's a guarantee.
Well, I think they keep going back to Switzerland because they're going back to the mother lode. They know that they use looted, stolen gold that they hoarded in Switzerland from the Nazis, and that became the basis of all of our banking in the West after the war. They know that. They all know that. And so they go back and they kind of celebrate with those demons once a year to get a recharge. I think that's why we have Davos.
Well, yes, let's talk about the Swiss for a minute. You know, the Bank of International Settlement was supposed to be for controlling the reconstruction of Germany and Germany's astounding debt that was put on it after World War I. Well, that didn't work at all, because why? You had a few individuals. We've gone over who those I'm not going to say it now, but we've gone over who those individuals are and how they controlled it all. But in the end, the Bank for International Settlement simply took all of the gold of all the countries, held it, and if you lost the war, they didn't give it back unless you were able to create a lawsuit that could get it back from some part of it back from them. And then what did they do? Now they're the clearinghouse for derivatives.
Yep.
They stand behind also all interest rates in central banks. So the way that you recharge each country's central bank system is all controlled by whether the Bank for International Settlements says you can do it. It's like the New York Stock Exchange has the DTCC, the Depositors Trust Clearing Corporation. Well, they have the Bank for International Settlement for derivatives. When it all goes down, if you try to reset the way Klaus says, and the banks go down, well, guess who gets paid first? The derivatives. Not we the people. Our money in banks are all gone. Our money in the stock market all gone, but the derivatives get paid first. So again, Switzerland used to be numbered accounts. Now it's numbered gold bullion accounts in Zurich. And we've gone into this in great detail. But, you know, it's simply these people in Switzerland who think they're above it all. They had war in every country around them in World War I and II, and yet they get to be immune because they're the bankers. That's not right. And then you get to see people use Switzerland as the basis for conducting the war without being bombed on. You know, that's completely absurd. So there's a whole belief that the Illuminati have their origin in Switzerland, and that Adam Weishaupt and the Illuminati and the Swiss are the Octagon Templars, and that they connect to the Savoy line, and that that connects to the direct blood lineage of Jesus Christ, and that connects to the previous head of the Spanish royalty and now his son, and that that is the way that Switzerland is above everything.
Well, let me give you a couple more facts that we uncovered about Ravensburg, which is, again, about 45, 50 miles away from Zurich, I believe. And Ravensburg, during World War II, was a processing hub for Allied prisoners of war. And on the surface, okay, that's where they did it. But when you look at the logistics of it, it doesn't make sense that it was there, because it's in the most southern part of Germany. And if you're going to process Allied troops from all over the country, why would you send it to the southernmost part? So there had to be another reason. We believe that reason was those POWs became a shield against the Allied bombing of Ravensburg. The Wikipedia on Ravensburg is absolutely laughable in talking about how the Allies weren't that interested in Ravensburg, and it had no strategic importance and all that. Those are all lies. Ravensburg had huge manufacturing, and Escher Weiss was there building major gas turbines for the Allies, and then immediately after the war, even for the Soviets. In fact, the Soviets had some of their advanced technology before 10 years before we had it in this country. So we've got this anomaly that they were processing POWs. We also know that there was at least one labor camp in Ravensburg. And then the other thing that really locked it in for us is it was the primary processing location for all Nazi gold going to Liechtenstein and Switzerland, was through Ravensburg. So, and by the way, during that time, Klaus's father was a city father. He was a member of the various industrial organizations in the town, and certainly, given his position, would have known that these surreptitious activities were going on. So what we're seeing is a center of gravity for many of the things that you're talking about from much earlier in history. In fact, we now know that Raymond of St. Giles actually marched the first crusaders through Ravensburg. So history is folding back on itself, it seems. And now we're seeing that one of the Ravensburg children is attempting to take down the whole world. And so the question is, who is this man? And that is another area of discovery that has just occurred in the last few days, which I don't know that anyone knows. And that is basically that Klaus advertises a mother that wasn't his mother, and he has a brother by his real mother, and his brother went and did business in Brazil. He he has disowned, he never talks about his real mother. He talks about his stepmother. And most people think his stepmother is his real mother. His real mother was a Swiss Jew who abandoned him in 1948 after he was born and moved to the United States. Those are facts. We've now discovered the paperwork on her. And he doesn't even talk about her. He doesn't even mention her name in any of his biographies. So those are facts. Now, what they mean, I don't know. Was she getting out of Germany because she was a Jew and knew that Hitler was coming to power? That's certainly possible. Were they abandoning her because she was a Jew in order to raise Klaus in the right way so that he would have be acceptable in the German culture? That's probable too. So we don't know all the meanings of that, but once we get this information out, hopefully people will start digging more into this.
Well, one thing's for sure, he then used Switzerland as his basis to hide and protect himself later and always be immune, and then be directly connected to the Queen herself through the Privy Council. So we get to see that Klaus is nothing more than another pilgrim, but that it's gone to his head, and he really thinks like a George Soros. Remember when George Soros thinks he's beyond the Privy Council, his open society, he believes is probably beyond what he thinks the Privy Council can do. And he has Privy Council members help found it, Lord Mark Malik Brown, et cetera, et cetera. So we have these individual megalomaniacs who come out and state their grotesque, gluttonous, lustful intent, and people applaud them and want to know how to support them. Is there any stock in the stock market that they can support these guys with? So it's disgusting to think.
Yeah, it's appalling
that we listen to these people at all. This is the World Economic Forum of scumbags, and we should listen carefully to them. Remember, their meetings used to be Chatham House. Nobody could report. Not even reporters went into those meetings. Nobody reported what happened in the Bilderberger meetings at first, if you remember. Same thing with the Bohemian Grove. Same thing with the Trilateralists. No notes, but brainwashing. So what we have, I want to jump back to Nigel Knowles and the new brainwashing of the White House. We don't have to worry about Joe Biden. He doesn't have a brain to wash. He's got nothing. He's told what to do, and he doesn't even know what he's saying. So we know Kamala Harris will end up the president. And unless, of course, Trump still, through the courts or through whatever actions, ends up contesting this, and we have a contested election, we have a re-election, which could happen. I would love to see that happen. But basically, Nigel Knowles is controlling the Prince's Trust Fund, which is a foundation. And basically, we had already pointed out in previous research that it is nothing more as a front for laundering, for basically child pedophilia, for basically human slavery, for basically eugenics. And who supports these very organizations like the International Chamber of Commerce or the International Crisis Group? Same group. That would be, of course, you have the Queen, and then you have the Gateses and the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and Wellcome Trust, and all of the same culprits, all hiding behind philanthropy, all saying they're good things. Look for anything good they've done, and you can't find it. But you can certainly find that they've invested huge amounts of money and time and energy.
Now, wait a second. I just went to all those websites, and they all have pictures of happy children running and playing, and it's always about the children. All their foundations are about the children.
That's before they sell them into
slave
trading.
Okay.
That's beforehand. The children are happy then. I tried to look up any good deeds the Knights of Malta have ever done. I found one in history. One charitable act for the group that supposedly is the largest charitable organization on the face of the earth with the richest people in it, who are all an insider trading group, and yet they don't help anybody except themselves.
Well, they have pictures of ambulances. They're big into ambulances, that's right. Remember?
That's right, Hospitallers, because they inherited the tradition of the Hospitallers and the Templars.
Right. So these PR people, they love to put these pictures of children up on their websites. and all these glowing words that don't mean anything, but kind of like Klaus's book.
Isn't the Princess Trust even got the word Princess Trust for Children or something in it?
That's one of their objectives, but it's just the Princess Trust.
Isn't that nice? A known pedophiliac has a foundation for children. Shouldn't draw any suspect. No, they think things should be fine. How about if his friend Jimmy comes along, they always have a good time with the people they're giving the money to. So what I'm stating is Nigel Knowles from DLA Piper, who's the controller of Doug Imhoff, who's the controller, of course, of Kamala Harris, who's the controller of Joe Biden. And so we actually find that the controls fall right back into the lap of literally the Queen, the Privy Council, and her child.
And the Pilgrim Society.
This is pure Pilgrim Society. All of these people will bow down and take their sirs and their knighthoods and their aristocracy and their names and their landed gentry from a monarchy that should have no power because it's based upon sheer insanity of the Dark Ages. So why would we give any credence to the Queen? Why does the Queen always get her piece of the pie first? Why do the Crown agents get every single deal, no bid contract, before anybody does with OPEC or with the USAID or anything? Why? Because it all goes back to Britain. Britain is still taxing us for everything. And unfortunately, Lord Mark Malik Brown, through SGO Smartmatic, through the election, so that right in front of our eyes, we get to see hundreds, if not thousands, of people commit federal crimes to support a conspiracy against the election of our duly elected president, Donald J. Trump, who, as far as I'm concerned, is our president, because I haven't seen Joe Biden do anything yet. I'm waiting, literally. I'm waiting. The inauguration there are all kinds of fake aspects to it. Everything he's done, there's been fake aspects to it. So does he actually know that it's all fake? I don't know. All I know is that I knew there would be a battle, but I had no idea that every single Democrat and every single Republican would turn against anyone who supported Trump, though they supported Trump just beforehand. That's how they got elected. But the second that they thought that he created a riot in Washington, D.C., that's it. No more support for Trump. But they still consider him the leader of the party, and he still has more draw than all of the rest of them put together.
Wait, we're talking about the people who knocked down the World Trade Centers. We're talking about the people that started the Vietnam War. We're talking about the people that fomented World War I, World War II, Rwanda, Cambodia, Vietnam. These are the same people. So all of a sudden, they're going to get self-righteous and say that there were a couple of guys who showed up at the White House and were talking nicely and to the policeman. That's a riot. Give me a break.
Many of those policemen have been found to be working with the terrorists who are not Trumpers. So when the truth comes out, it's going to be the exact opposite, but the truth doesn't mean much, especially when it comes 7 years after it happened and the statute of limitation has been expired. So anyway, I'm so thrilled that we got a chance to talk.
I am too. It's great to talk to you.
Your research is always amazing, and I'm so glad that you confirmed for me that Santa Klaus Schwab is actually evil. I wasn't even willing to look at him. It's like George Soros. I want to vomit when I look at him.
He reminds me of Mitch McConnell's cousin, or maybe his brother.
And Nigel Knowles, we might as well say Nigel is running the White House. So already you have pointed out the Pilgrim, not a conspiracy, but the Pilgrim Society members who are at the levers of control.
Correct.
Levers of control. And we are pointing out the mechanism, and you can now sit back and see these names pop up again and again. And when they do, you'll know who they are. So thank you, Michael and the Miners. Holy moly. It's amazing what you guys do. I've just been taking it easy. I've been out on the beach sunning and getting a good tan myself. But I'm back, and I'm trying to help you guys a little bit. But, you're always so advanced, it takes me a while to catch up a bit. So thank you so much, and thank you for today's show. It was very informative, and Nigel Knowles.
We got Sir Nigel Knowles.
Sir Nigel Knowles, just like Sir Nick Clay and Sir Richard Allen, we got your number. And Klaus Schwab closed down Davos.